Public Safety Committee will come to order. Members, we have two bills on the agenda today. Want to make the announcement. I think we canceled the DOC tour, right? We'll cancel the DOC tour. So your loss. What we're going to do today is I need someone, Representative Cornish, we're going to move two bills to the floor. As I said yesterday, we're not going to have a policy, an omnibus policy bill. So we're going to move the Detmer bill and the Hillstrom bill to the floor. And we're going to hold off on the Kiefer bill. Where's Representative Kiefer? I need to have, she's not here. Okay, I need to have a discussion with her about that bill because there is a fiscal note, so I do want to get it passed. I just don't know how to do it quite yet. So with that, Representative Cornish, would you move House File 88? The motion would be to for House File 88 to pass and refer to the General Register. Oh, do you need to hear that, Representative Hillstrom? Okay, then it goes to the General Register. That's what I thought. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd move House File 88 to be recommended to pass and move to the General Register.
Okay, and members, just to refresh, this is the Detmer bill that established a presumption of rehabilitation through a person's honorable military services following a prior offense. Is there any discussion on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion prevails. Representative Hillstrom, would you move your bill? That would be. Can you just say briefly what it is?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, this is the bill that would make it possible for law enforcement to forfeit the money that people bring when they solicit a prostitute. Currently, we can forfeit property. We cannot forfeit the cash, and this would allow law enforcement to forfeit that as well.
Very good. Any discussion on that motion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Representative Hillstrom, that your bill is to the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then, Representative Kiefer, I will talk with you later about your bill. Understood? And we'll figure something out.
Thanks,
I apologize for starting late. We civil law took longer than we thought. And we'll take House File 1051, Representative Rosenthal. And Representative Rosenthal, does this bill, where does this go? Civil law? Okay. You want to move your bill, Representative Rosenthal?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1051, and I believe it's going to civil law.
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. So, Representative Rosenthal, welcome to your committee. Please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1051 is basically a crime victims' rights bill. It does three main things.
Members and everybody else, if you could please turn off your power off your cell phone so we can hear the testimony. Thank you.
It establishes a working group for restitution for victims. It clarifies language on stalking, and it has some protection of victim notification data in it. And I would like you to give consideration to this bill, and I do have two testifiers, and I will turn it over to them for the time being.
Before you begin, Representative Rosenthal, can you tell me why why we're striking harassment from the stat? Did we already do that prior law? Why are we striking harassment and not just including stalking to that provision? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good morning. Suzanne Elwell, Office of Justice Programs, Department of Public Safety. Mr. Chair, in 2010, the legislation was changed 609.749 related to harassment. That was renamed a stalking statute. However, all references to harassment were not changed throughout the statutory scheme. And so what this bill does is just change those outdated references to harassment, from harassment to stalking.
Okay, very good. So, Ms. Elwell, as long as you got the floor there, why don't you just provide your testimony?
I'm here to speak on three of the provisions, and then Kelly Moeller, Executive Director from the Minnesota Alliance on Crime, will speak to the Restitution Working Group. So as I said, the one provision is just to provide a clarification to the statutes to make sure we get rid of the outdated references to harassment and replace it with the proper term stalking. Another part of the bill does provide an additional protection to stalking victims. One right that victims of violent crime currently have is a protection against employer retaliation when victims of violent crime or their families take reasonable time off to attend court proceedings for court proceedings related to the crime. Under that statute, the definition of victim of violent crime does not include stalking victims. However, other definitions of violent crime within our statutory scheme do include stalking victim or stalking as a violent crime. So this bill would just make sure that protection would also apply equally to victims of stalking. The other major provision within this bill relates to data that is collected and used for purposes of notifying crime victims of an offender's release from custody and other changes in custody status. This proposal would close the gaps in protection related to release notification data, ensuring that data that is collected and used for notification purposes would be private, non-public data. Right now, although there are some protections on some data collected for notification purposes, it does not apply to all circumstances. And so what this bill will do, it would impact data collected and retained by the Minnesota VINE and Minnesota Choice Services, the two statewide automated victim notification services, as well as data held by county jail facilities. Finally, there's just one small change related to a notification provision. Right now, victims of violent crime are notified by jail facilities of the release of offender, and they're provided referral information. And there's one small provision that would say that the information that is given to these victims would be to appropriate crime victim services, not just to sexual assault services, which is what it says right now.
Thank you.
Turn it over to Kelly Moeller.
Representative what? Okay.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Kelly Moeller, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance on Crime. We are the General Crime Victim Coalition for the state, and we seek to improve the criminal justice system's response to crime victims. I started at the coalition just over a year ago, and I started talking to our member programs about issues that were really important to victims. And at the top of everybody's list is restitution. And so as a result of those conversations, I've talked with people in every judicial district, and we've worked together to sort of informally to discuss restitution and some of the problems that we've seen with respect to collecting, ordering, and requesting restitution. Before I talk about some of those concerns, I would like to just emphasize how important restitution is. It's important to crime victims because it restores them financially to the position that they were in prior to the crime. For many victims, this can make the difference for them being able to survive financially. Research has also shown that restitution is important to defendants. It's an important aspect of rehabilitating defendants, as well as deterring future criminal conduct. Now, some of the problems with restitution currently and how it's working, there's often confusion regarding what agency or what agencies should be involved in the process, and as a result of that, there's lack of communication with the victim. One of the other problems that we've heard a lot about is payment plans, so an offender might be ordered to pay restitution, and then how that payment plan is set up, or if a payment plan is set up, it's often an arbitrary amount. There's no mechanism currently for a state or victim to challenge the amount that's set up. And then probably the biggest concern that we've heard about is offenders who fail to pay restitution. Our statutes currently allow for probation to be revoked for failure to pay. It is very rare that that happens. And counties, judicial districts seem to handle this in different manners. Some districts, they hold a hearing, may extend probation. Other districts, they do nothing. And really the bottom line is if a victim doesn't receive restitution and no efforts are being made to collect restitution, it's basically an empty promise to the victim. a legislatively created restitution working group would be very important here. The key stakeholders really need to be involved in this discussion, and the legislatively created working group would invite all of those stakeholders to the table. We anticipate that the working group would make recommendations to the legislature in addition to best practices that can be implemented by those working with restitution that wouldn't require legislative change. We've been encouraged by examples from other states that have convened working groups to examine restitution, and even counties within Minnesota have been working, some counties individually have been working to improve their process, and we would hope to use this information in coming forward with recommendations to the legislature. I can't emphasize enough how important restitution is to the criminal justice system. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions of the witnesses? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that this is an excellent idea to do. I'm strongly supportive. I recently learned that if you actually don't get a conviction, you get a stay of adjudication on a case, you can't send the restitution to collections because the formal court process doesn't permit that. So as this body decides whether or not to allow different types of diversions and differing outcomes on cases, we always have to keep in mind the impact of restitution and victims. So thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Very good. Thank you for your testimony, Representative Rosenthal. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak for or against this bill? Okay, Representative Rosenthal, do you want to have any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to thank you and the members.
Okay, do you want to renew your motion then?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that House File 1051 passes and be referred to the Committee on Civil Law.
Any discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. 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 Opposed? That motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Rosenthal. Next on the agenda is Representative Mahoney, House File 1214. Well, this would be par for the morning after what we just went through. So, I was trying to rush through everything else so we would have ample opportunity to discuss this bill, but I think what we'll do we have all of the testifiers here for and against the bill? Okay. I will do this, if it's all right with the committee, is I will move the bill since I'm a co-author on the bill, and then we will have testimony for and against, and hopefully Representative Mahoney will come in during that period. So, I will move that House File 1214 be passed and referred to the Judiciary Committee. And So, County Attorney Choi, you're first up. If you want to maybe bring, do you have folks that you want to testify? And let me just say straight out that we, Mr. Waltz has requested a fiscal note on the bill because there was not, we don't have one. Preliminary information is not, well, I guess we won't even just, we will have it if it needs to come, if the bill needs to come back here, we will do that. County Attorney Choi, welcome to the committee. Maybe you can just sort of explain what the problem is. I'm sure that's what Representative Mahoney would do, and then what the bill does, if you don't mind. I hate to put you in the spot like that, but.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the House Public Safety Committee. It's a pleasure for me to be here today to be in support of Representative Mahoney's bill, House File 1214. Also, too, I also want to thank Representative Sheldon Johnson, who has been very involved in this issue, and also a very dear friend of mine who's in the audience today and someone who I very much miss, Representative Carol McFarland, who was the House chief author of the bill last year and who worked so hard on this. And she was here for another issue, and we just happened to run into each other, and so I'm so glad that she could be here to be a part of this. With respect to this bill that's before you, I became interested in this bill after we were able to unravel a criminal scheme that was happening in St. Paul in the summer of 2011 involving over 50 vehicles that were stolen as a part of a criminal scheme. The majority of these defendants stole these vehicles off of public streets, people's driveways, just anywhere in the public domain, and these criminals were using tow trucks or just literally just stealing the cars, but then taking them to the scrapyard. And they would then basically sell these cars that were just perfectly fine, that operated just, in fact, sometimes these criminals would actually drive the cars right into the scrapyard, and then within a matter of hours, these cars would be scrapped. And so it got me to thinking that we needed to do something with respect to reviewing kind of the regulations and the laws that we have with respect to the industry and how we can go about doing a better job for the victims of auto theft, because at the end of the day, you know, the intentions that we have for those of us who support this bill, our intentions are to do a better job around the enforcement of crime against criminals, and then also to figure out a way to address this problem, because it's not being addressed, especially with respect to the high price of just raw materials that's out there. So I think something needs to be done. And I also want to say that we don't have an intention to harm the industry. I mean, we want to work with the industry, and we tried to do that last legislative session. We are going to meet with them today at 3 o'clock, and we hope to be able to have constructive conversation. But there are some things that, from a law enforcement perspective and from what we learned through the prosecution of this criminal scheme that we uncovered in 2011, there are some things that are just absolutely necessary. And at the crux of this bill, what is being proposed is, under current law today, if your car is over the age, 6 years or older, you don't have to have a title to scrap that vehicle, proof of ownership. I think that issue needs to be addressed, and what this bill does is it allows for that requirement to be imposed, because to have just somebody say that I own the vehicle, and if you drive a perfectly fine vehicle into the scrapyard and say, I want to scrap this vehicle, red flag should be going up immediately and saying there's something wrong with this picture. So that's one of the things that this bill does. Another thing that this bill, what we're trying to accomplish, and I know the law enforcement, my partners here can talk about this, but law enforcement needs time to catch up to this crime. Oftentimes, I think I'm getting a little static here. Oftentimes, what we see is that these cars are being scrapped within a matter of hours, and there needs to be time for law enforcement to catch up with this crime so that we can recover these vehicles. Oftentimes, the victims of auto theft, in this context, the criminals are looking for older cars, heavier cars. a lot of those individuals cannot afford comprehensive automobile liability insurance, so therefore, when their car is stolen, this is all they got. And so it's a huge impact on those people. And so what the bill does is that it proposes to have hold periods, 72-hour investigative hold, when we think that there might be some car that's stolen. If you do have title, that you hold the vehicle for 5 days, and if you don't have title, and those are the cases that we're situations that we're most concerned with when they don't have a title, that you would hold it for 15 days so that we could have time to kind of catch up, because in that context, that's where there's a likelihood that there's something wrong with that picture. And the industry will tell you, because we've had numerous meetings with them, but they will tell you that in that latter category with cars coming in without a title, it's a small, minuscule amount. It's not a lot of situations. But for those situations, what we're saying is we need a little bit more time so that we can have the investigation catch up with the system. Another thing, too, is that law enforcement needs information on a timely basis. The industry needs to share this information, and ultimately a partnership, an important one, for the benefit of the public and the benefit for the crime victims needs to happen. Police and the industry need to be able to share this information, and the legislature, I believe, has some role in making sure that that happens. Current law today is that the industry is required to report this data to the department every 30 days. Well, crime, you know, having this information about vehicles that are coming into the scrapyard, their VIN numbers, and all of that information that's articulated in the bill, reporting that information every 30 days does not serve a good public safety purpose. And in fact, what it really should be is that it should be real time. And with the technology that exists today, there's really no excuse not to do that. And there is technology out there, the automated pawn system. And someone, John Elder from the Minneapolis Police Department, will speak to that. But I can tell you that the APS system is something that law enforcement is very comfortable with around the state. They know how to use it. And so, therefore, this could be a very, very powerful tool. And I can tell you firsthand, as the chief prosecutor in Ramsey County, the APS system has solved crimes for us. You get a rash of burglaries in White Bear Lake. And then, these criminals then will go and try to pawn them, and then what ends up happening is we get a hit, and then we're able to solve a whole rash of burglaries that have impacted a neighborhood. So I think the APS system is one that it would be a perfect fit for this type of situation. Another thing, too, is that as a value, it should not be easy for criminals to scrap these vehicles and obtain cash. But under current law, the way that the law is structured, you could go and scrap your vehicle, and then there's one particular scrap processor that has an ATM right next to the counter. And the way that it should be is that we should be, if you scrap a vehicle, we'll pay you by check, certified mail, return receipt requested, so that we have your address and you showed us your driver's license, instead of just giving them cash or the ability to cash it right after they scrap the vehicle. And then the bill will talk a lot about better record keeping within the industry, and the bill also has stronger and graduated penalties for those who break the law. In general, that is kind of what the bill accomplishes. And again, our intentions, all of us here, are to help victims and to make sure that we can address this problem of auto theft, nothing more. And certainly we'll try to work with the industry, because it is not our intention to cause them harm. But at the same time, I will say that I do believe that the responsibility, some of this, needs to be borne by the industry. We need their help. And law enforcement, with that help, I think could create and do a lot of good things on behalf of the public. So,
County Attorney Choi, maybe I should probably know this, but what does the acronym APS mean?
The Automated Pawn System.
The Automated Pawn System. Representative Cornish was next, and then Representative Hillstrom and Simon. And proponents, you have about 20 minutes for this to make your case for this bill. Your opponents will have the same amount of time. I'd like to vote this and move it to the next committee. Representative Cornish.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, this is a perennial problem. It seems like it comes before us every year. I don't know if it's been 3 or 4 years now. And each side promises to get together and make some kind of a bargain and get this. And it puts me in the spot, because my tie is law enforcement, of course, and then also my ties to business. So I wish they would just everybody get their act together and instead of trying to have to sort through it here beforehand. But I was wondering if you could get to the just describe a couple of real basic things that's the hang up between you and the industry, what you think would tip each other over the edge so you could come to agreement, the main factors.
Okay, I just we'll have to have some little guideline here because we'll never get through this. So there were four people that want to ask questions of the county attorney. Is that it? The county attorney? Because we have several testifiers too. So
and I can hold my other questions.
Okay, you want to answer the question, County Attorney Choi?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney.
I would like to apologize for being late. I was dealing with the governor's staff, and I apologize. I do hope we can get to the testifiers. I know the county attorney has some good, can answer any questions that we have, but if I ask the testifiers to keep it very brief, could we take questions at the end? Would that be okay?
No, we're going to take these now.
All right.
Did you want to respond?
Sure. I could try. I mean, I can't speak for the industry, and but I think I can try. I think the concern that the industry has articulated to us is they would have some concerns with respect to the hold period. And I think another issue is the automated pawn system. The industry seems to be very concerned about that. But at the same time, the law enforcement, that's the system that we know, and it works. And so I think some discussion needs to happen about that. I think the other issues related to the dispute probably would be along the lines of how that 30-day process, current law says that we have to report within, that they have to report 30 days. I think they recognize that that doesn't really, that's not workable or doesn't really help law enforcement. But the question is what is the appropriate time? And the bill that's before you, it proposed to do it the next business day. And we think that's possible because if you're gathering this information and doing it the right way, you should be able to report that to law enforcement. But I'm sure that there's something that could be worked out where there could be some sort of compromise with respect to that. But those are the main issues that I'm aware of, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Thank you.
So we'll take these few questions, and then at a quarter to, we'll take the rest of your testimony. Representative Hilstrom, remember this bill goes to Commerce, Judiciary, and maybe somewhere else.
I'll be just really briefly. So is the group that has to do the recording is just the scrap metal dealer? You said that many of these involve tow trucks. So, for example, the city of Minneapolis has their own towing yard. There's a lot of private towing companies. Do they then need to record it as well as if they're going to go to scrapping it, or is it only the scrap metal dealer that's going to have to record it?
County Attorney Choi.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilstrom, this bill would propose to regulate the scrap industry. It has nothing to do with the tow trucks. The situation that I was describing is that criminals who had access to tow trucks were actually towing these vehicles from people's driveways to the scrapyard. So and that's really the only connection to tow truck operators.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I just wanted to say, I just needed to make sure I didn't need to abstain from voting on this. But members, I actually do have a case in which a tow truck person stole a car, took it to a scrap metal dealer, and sold it, and didn't pay the owner of the car for it. So this really does happen.
Representative Simon.
Just a quick question, and you know, full disclosure, one of my best friends, his family business was the scrap business, so I feel like I sort of grew up around it. And I just want to make sure, County Attorney Choi, just in reviewing the history of this, this is, as Representative Corner said, a recurring issue. It seems like in the last few years we have steadily asked them to do more and more. And my understanding is one of their objections is just the cumulative weight and the fact that this bill alone really does pile on a bunch of new stuff, the digital video, the new holds, the daily reporting, the APS, all in one bill. Do you think there might be some room for you to phase at least some of this in, or are there some that are higher priorities than other? I am somewhat sympathetic to the idea that there's a lot coming at them.
County Attorney Choi.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, the bill was presented during the 2012 legislative session for the first time. I don't believe that the issue had come before that I'm aware of because the auto theft ring that was uncovered in St. Paul was in summer of 2011. So So this it's only been here once before the legislature, and Representative McFarland, as I mentioned, was the chief author of that bill. I know that there are lots of issues that are in this bill, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to, in a comprehensive fashion, create a way in which we can do a better job around going after those people that are accountable and asking the industry to be a part of it. Now, as a part of the discussions, this bill has many more stops to go, and we'll have many discussions with the industry. But last session, we did that. But at the end of the day, it didn't work out because I felt like at the end of the day, the industry probably had the advantage because they knew that they could get this bill bottled up in certain committees. And so there was probably not an incentive to negotiate. I feel like this year things might be a little bit different, and so I'm hopeful that we could get to the table and negotiate in good faith and try to do good by and do right by the victims of crime.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, County Attorney, I was just glancing through this, and with your testimony you talked about recording the name and telephone number when they sell the vehicle. Would it be much easier, since they're either driving a tow truck or driving the vehicle in, just have these companies photocopy their driver's license? They should have if they're driving the vehicle, they should have a driver's license on them. And this would make identification much easier.
County Attorney Choi.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, that's a great idea. But in addition to that, they should prove that they own the vehicle. And they should have valid title.
Representative Johnson.
That is correct. They should have the valid title, but I actually had a case involving similar situation about 20 years ago. When I found the very next day when I found the vehicle, I found it when it was coming out of the crusher.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Attorney Choi. I have heard from my scrap metal dealers and some associated businesses that in my district along those lines as well. And Representative Simon, Representative Cornish, hit on what I want to hit on is they have told me that they have a very good working relationship with our law enforcement in my district, and this is not a problem in my district. And it seems that it appears to be an issue down here. As Representative Hillstrom said, it does happen. I believe it does happen. But, my folks are saying this is, as Representative Simon indicated, is going to put some burdensome on my local folks, and it's going to significantly reduce their bottom line or eliminate jobs in an area that we need more jobs. So can you just answer the question, this impacts the whole state of Minnesota, but yet there doesn't seem to be a problem in all of the state of Minnesota.
County Attorney Choi.
I think the issue is a statewide issue. We have, auto thefts are happening everywhere. Obviously, with where the population is the largest, we're going to have higher instances of auto theft. In fact, there are certain zip codes in St. Paul that are the highest in the state of Minnesota. What we're seeing and what we're trying to accomplish is basically what we're seeing is their cars are being stolen and they're being taken to the scrapyard. And so we're just trying to address that issue for crime victims. And that it's as simple as that, and we don't wish harm on the industry. What we're asking for is that the industry take some ownership and responsibility and work with law enforcement. And I think a great partnership can be made. The way that my motivation and what I'm trying to accomplish is to do right by crime victims and to do a better job around the enforcement of the crime of auto theft.
Representative Kelly, then we'll take testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Choi. Thank you, Mr. Chair, County Attorney Choi. That case you referred to in 2011, did you prosecute that case?
County Attorney Choi.
Representative Kelly, our office prosecuted over 26 defendants involving 50 vehicles with respect to those criminal schemes that we uncovered, correct?
Okay, did
Representative Kelly.
Excuse me, thank you, Mr. Chair. Did those individuals go off free?
County Attorney Choi.
Representative Kelly, no. In fact, we had heavy consequences for Many of those defendants, if they were convicted, I think maybe one or two of them were acquitted by a jury. And that's a big part of it, is that we need to hold those people that do the wrong accountable. But I see, in being very involved with these cases, what came to my realization is that we have some gaps in the system. And as part of the investigation, it was very difficult to get a lot of the records that were necessary to develop the case. And Ken Reed could talk a little bit about that. And I think that there's one gaping hole, is the fact that there's no one's asking for a title with older vehicles. And I think if that was a requirement, it would be very difficult for people to scrap stolen cars.
Kelly, real quick.
Mr. Chair, yes. And, well, County Attorney Choi, I believe it seems like we've got a smaller problem and a defined problem. Like Representative Ward said, we're trying to kill an ant with a sledgehammer here. And you successfully, under current law, successfully prosecuted the majority of those people. So as Representative Corrigan said, it seems to me that there's room for us to get together with the industry and work this out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, testimony in support of the bill. Commander Reed?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the committee.
Good
please,
morning, Mr.
Please
Chair.
Please state your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kenneth Reed. I'm Executive Commander to Chief Tom Smith with the St. Paul Police Department. Metal theft and diversion continues to be a major criminal issue in St. Paul, and that's my jurisdiction, and that's what I can speak to. In January of this year, thieves struck the St. Paul's Phelan Ice Rink, taking 64 large copper pipes from the rink's cooling system. City parks, construction sites, vacant homes are all frequent targets. In August of this year, 75 sections of copper wire were stolen from two light rail transit stations under construction, a loss valued at about $15,000. Several instances of metal thefts from vacant homes resulted in some gas leaks and some very worried neighbors. When I was here on this issue last year, we referenced, and John Choi just referenced, an extensive ongoing investigation which exposed regulatory weaknesses in the current laws pertaining to scrap metal businesses. As a point of reference, that investigation uncovered the tow truck drivers, among others, operating illegally and taking advantage of weak standards and loopholes. They were stealing cars and scrapping them for cash. If you recall, County Attorney Choi referenced 50 stolen cars, but in actuality, those were just with the defendants that were prosecuted. There was a total of 226 stolen vehicles identified either physically or on paper through the course of that investigation. 139 of them were scrapped at two metro area operations. 51 of those vehicles were identified as having been stolen in St. Paul, but the rest were stolen from out state locations. 26 suspects were ultimately charged in this, and thousands upon thousands of dollars were paid to insurance claimants. In many of those cases, the vehicles were stolen before the person could ever report them being stolen to law enforcement. The figures I just cited, you give you some scale of the scope of the problem. And as an aside, I have to say and let you know that this was internationally recognized investigation. They received an award of merit from the International Association Chief of Police because of how large scale this was and how involved this became in trying to get the information from the industry and put these together into prosecutable cases. Since that investigation, we've seen the number of stolen automobiles drop from a total of 2,053 in 2010 to 1,805 in 2012, and that's great progress. But unfortunately, we have examples that the situation remains and the behavior continues. In just the past year, we've recovered an additional 27 stolen cars from Twin City automobile scrap operations and several from outstate locations in western Minnesota and central Minnesota. In the opinion of the St. Paul Police Department, this legislation to close the loopholes and help with the regulatory problems that we identified in that investigation is long overdue. It will aid law enforcement to combat the problem. It will help the industry by ensuring sound business practices and join them to the community by becoming good community stewards. and it will ensure consumer and victim protections that do not currently exist in Minnesota law. Thank you to Representative Mahoney, County Attorney John Choi, for bringing this important issue forward again, and please let us know that we can assist you in any way.
Thank you, Commander, for your testimony. Welcome to the Great River School in St. Paul. Thanks for coming to the Public Safety Committee. Okay, next testifier, if you could try to keep your comments to 3 minutes, please. We need to hear from the opponents of the Bill 2 and have more discussion.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is John Elder. I'm with Minneapolis Police Department. In 1995, the automated pawn system was put into place to help collect and assemble the tens of thousands of handwritten pawn slips that were coming in monthly through the city of Minneapolis and surrounding areas. The APS was put together with the strictest security in mind. All data is locked behind the firewalls of the state of Minnesota, and over 280 police agencies gain this information by individual tunnels and VPNs that have been crafted to allow only those with the proper credentials to get in. Right now, the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association Public-Private Partnership is working together to deal with the concerns of scrap metal theft. When APS started in 1995, we heard a lot of the same concerns that we're hearing from scrap dealers today. Yet today, Minnesota's largest and most reputable pawn shop, Pawn America, supports APS. In 2005, APS was expanded to include secondhand stores, as a great deal of cities have passed secondhand ordinances and mandated that information be recorded through the automated pawn system. In 2010, the system was changed in name officially to the APS, the automated property system, to more accurately reflect what the system does. There are fees for this. That's 90 cents per transaction. That transaction doesn't matter if it's one item or 1,000 items. It's 90 cents. That is what is charged the agency. The agency charges it on to the end user. The module for the scrap metal at this time is not written. We have all of the tunnels, all the VPNs. We have all of the framework set up, but the module itself is not written. And we look to the scrap industry to aid us in putting together a system that is going to be beneficial to them as well as beneficial to law enforcement. We're looking for something that is going to meet everybody's needs.
Thank you for your testimony. And members, we're going to meet a little bit beyond 11:30. I hope it doesn't inconvenience you, but we started late because of the civil law meeting. So, Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chairman, Jim Franklin, Executive Director for the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. I have with me Dave Peachett, the Executive Director for the Police Chiefs Association. We'll try to be very, very brief.
Welcome both of you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think County Attorney Choi has highlighted the case, and the problem is the holding period, law enforcement trying to catch up. Let me just leave you with two things. I won't go through the criminal things. We want to use those to try to better find things. But sometimes there's just simply errors and things that happen. We think that this system would help find things so that people's cars don't inadvertently get crushed and put away. The other thing is, as a young detective, I was taught early on in a criminal violation, follow the money. And one suggestion we've worked with and tried to work with business and industry in a collaborative way is if we could delay the payment. Right now, it's the cash. When you turn it in, turn the car, the scrap in, you get cash right away. If there's a 5-day, 6-day, 10-day waiting period to make sure that's clear before you get paid, the bad guys don't bring the cars back because they want to go someplace else where they get their money right away. So if we could come up with a statewide standard to delay payment to honest people, it solves a great deal of our problems. With that, I'll conclude.
Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you. I'm Dave Peachett, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, and we're here to testify in support of this bill.
As an association, we heard the message loud and clear from the last year's presentation on this bill, and we did create a committee to deal with scrap metal theft, and it is basically a scrap metal committee. It includes representatives from the International Scrap Metal Recyclers Institute, Xcel Energy, other private individuals that are interested in this topic, and law enforcement. This bill did receive the approval of that subcommittee. And we are working with the members of the private sector on dealing with the descriptors as part of the APS system, and that those discussions are ongoing, and we expect to have that resolved soon. So therefore, we'd like to just say that we do support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Picha. Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Yes. My name is Kathy Rain. Me and my frog. I live with my husband and son in St. Paul. 1 year ago, thieves stole our car. That morning, I was supposed to take my son to the doctor's. He was recovering from a serious illness. And now with the car gone, we had to miss a few of his appointments. The cost of the car was a total loss because we only had collision coverage. Another thing that really hurt was that all my husband's work tools were in the trunk of that car, $4,000 to $5,000 worth. He's a carpenter, union carpenter. Our homeowners luckily covered but only half of that of the contents, and we had to use that money to buy a new used car. Also, my husband has had to ask fellow carpenters to borrow tools from them just to be ready for work, and that's not an easy thing for him to do. We still haven't replaced most of his tools because his work in construction has been slow. We don't have any spare cash. And talking to friends in the Twin Cities, I found out about a lot of other people who lost their cars through theft, too. One of my neighbors has had two cars stolen in the past few years from in front of her house, like ours was. Last summer, we witnessed a family coming back from the Hmong Soccer Festival looking for their car. They had parked it in our neighborhood, and when they got back from the games, they found it was stolen. Immediately after we reported our car being stolen, the police told us our best bet was to call the scrappers, especially Metro Metals, because they buy cars for scrap without a title if the car is older than 6 years, as was our car. At first, Metro Metals gave me a hard time, but under police pressure, they finally took my calls. I gave them my car's VIN and description. They told me they hadn't seen the car and that it wasn't in their records. If it turned up, they were supposed to contact the police. I called a few more times over the next week, but nothing. Finally, when I was ready to finalize with my homeowner's report, 5 weeks later, Metro Metals admitted to having the car. Moreover, they had bought it and crushed it the exact same day it was stolen, the exact same hour, actually, for a few $100. By law, they had recorded the thief's driver's license, and there was a picture taken of him there, but he was somehow, the picture came out, and he was hiding in his hood. So when my case went before a judge, we didn't have a really good picture ID of him. If we had been protected by a legal waiting period, a hold delay, I believe we would not have lost our car and the tools. I don't think this thief would have bothered to steal it. I'd very much like to see a full 15-day hold period because you need that time to come out of shock. You find out where to look for your car, and you have to keep calling around. And as I said, Metro Metals not only stonewalled me, they lied to me. I'm sure they're worried that this new regulation will cost them money, because it will. They make a lot of money off stolen cars right now. Hopefully that stream will dry up if you'll please pass this bill into law. My neighbors and I feel like sitting ducks. A lot of us don't have garages, and we drive older cars. I sincerely hope you'll protect us. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Could you state your name for the record, please?
David Markle, Minneapolis. I have a workshop in the Midway area of St. Paul, workshop and office. I often walk back and forth, which is a distance of 4 miles, 8 miles round trip. On May 3rd, the morning of May 3rd, 2011, I arrived at my shop and discovered that my prized, I called it the Expedition Trooper, Isuzu Trooper, was gone. There were tread marks which suggested that it might have been towed away from the private area in back of my shop. I immediately called the police and also informed the neighbors in the next business. I was sitting inside later in the day making calls to borrow a car from a friend, and the neighbor heard something. It's hard for me to hear outside what's going on sometimes there. She went outside and discovered that the thief had returned with a tow truck and was trying to tow my other vehicle, which a less valuable vehicle. She scared them away, took the license number of the tow truck, which turned out to be a junkyard license plate, so it meant nothing at all. I, on the advice of a scrapper friend, a reputable person, I within a day or so, I started calling all of the scrap yards and some of the used auto parts places, including Metro Metals. In retrospect, I realized Metro was evasive. They said, well, sometimes we catch thieves, but blah, blah, and they didn't give me a yes or no or any useful information. Later that year, in November, the thief was prosecuted for that and some other thefts. Of course, there was a photo ID at Metro Metals, a photo of the intake car with my license plate on it, which helped. For me, it was an uninsured loss. At the sentencing of the criminal, I supported a claim for restitution with documentation of everything that I'd put into this car to fix it other than routine maintenance, which was over $13,000, and that was accepted by the court. I used the car not only for hauling things around town, but for going up remote trail, backcountry roads to remote trailheads. I'd crossed, done River Ford several times with it, and I was it was a serious loss for me. If this legislation had been a part of state law at the time, that car would not have been crushed.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other proponents of the bill that would like to testify? Okay, then I will take the opponents. And members, I would advise that this is going to two more committees, so and County Attorney Choi has indicated he's going to be working with the scrap metal dealers this afternoon. Mr. Cassidy, please thank you for welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Cassidy with the law firm of Leonard Street and Dinard. We are legislative counsel to the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries. First of all, I want to thank County Attorney Choi for working with us over the past year and a half on legislation. I hope we can come to some resolution on this, and for Representative Mahoney for working with us as well. But first off, I just want to say we're opposed to the provisions contained in the House File 1214 for a number of reasons. These are issues that we have rehashed over and over for the past 6 years. And I just want to remind folks that in 2007 we went through this same issue, actually worked with Representative Paymar at that time, as well as some other legislators that are no longer in the legislature. But at that time, some of these same provisions came up, and that legislature in 2007 decided not to adopt them. What they did adopt, and I think you have a handout here, is a laundry list of things that our industry is required to do. Not only are they required to do it, but they're required to do it with law-abiding customers and citizens that come to their scrapyards doing legitimate business each day in and day out, 365 days a year. If you go through the list, we are required to take down everything from personal identifying information, including their race. We're required to take pictures of them. We're required to take pictures of what they're selling to us. We're required to take pictures of their car or their vehicle. We're required to take pictures of their license plate. All that information we're required to hold as well. On top of that, you can see in the list here that we've had to install video or still recording equipment. The new law would require that we update that only after 5 years. If you turn the page and look at what House File 1214 would now require us to do, in addition to that, I'll run through the laundry list and make some comments. First of all, it requires us to have our customers sign a statement under penalty of perjury that the automobile that is not stolen. Number two, it would require that we use the electronic, another electronic criminal database, the automated pawn system. I think I've had this discussion with a number of you on the automated pawn system. I actually work for another client that is very supportive of the automated pawn system that the police chiefs alluded to, we don't think the automated pawn system is applicable to scrap metal. One bucket of copper looks like the next bucket of copper. We also think that the transactions that the police are looking for at a pawn shop, where the criminal is coming into the pawn shop over and over, is very useful to them. In our business, we have scrappers that come in and day out. A customer might stop in a scrapyard 15, 20, 25, 30 times a month. Is that person going to get a phone call from the law enforcement community just because they're a frequent customer of a scrapyard? On top of that, the transaction fees for the automated pawn system right now, I believe the opening bid is 90 cents, and it goes all the way up to $3 in some jurisdictions. I believe the city of Fridley right now is charging $3 a transaction. Mr. Tony White is with me. I think we did a back-of-the-napkin calculation of 90 cents on the transactions in his scrapyard last year. That would have generated almost $150,000 just at his yard alone. Next, require customers to be paid by check and delivered to the customer by certified return receipt mail. We checked with the Postal Service. That charge would also be from $5 to $8, not including the administrative overhead it takes to process something like that. Require the scrapper to hold all vehicles with proof of ownership for 5 days. If you visit one of our scrapyards, there's no room to hold cars. It's very, any of the ones, especially in the metro area, are very tight quartered. We don't have the room to hold cars for 5 days, much less 15. We also have very stringent civil and criminal penalties in this bill. I know we'll discuss those in another committee later on. Also, it gives law enforcement new authority to conduct inspections at will, and also, as I alluded to earlier, requires us to update our digital video equipment. With that, I'm going to wrap up by saying that we very much want to work with the law enforcement community. We do work with the law enforcement community day in and day out. The stories that the victims told is very compelling, and we help law enforcement throughout the state on a daily basis try and solve those crimes as it is today. We really believe that the 2007 law needs to be better enforced. Our members register with the BCA. They participate in not only the BCA's crime alerts, but also scrapmetaltheft.com is another place that we share information with law enforcement, the law enforcement community. We think all of us can do a better job at that, but this bill is very onerous and would require very costly revisions to the way they do business and really place a lot of burdens on our customers that we don't believe they would like. With that, I'm going to turn it over to one of our members, Tony White. Thank you.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair and committee. I'm Tony White with Northern Metal Recycling. I'm a company that operates 14 different locations in the state, and I'm part of ISRI, which is the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries, which has close to 100 members in the state, being recyclers to equipment dealers and whatnot. With a bill like this, this will restrain our business to points of a level of costs that are extraordinary and will put businesses out of business. Just so you have an idea of how many cars are recycled in the state of Minnesota, we're roughly estimating close to 150,000 cars are recycled in the state of Minnesota, going to scrap yards, going to auto wreckers, going to parts dealers that are parting the cars out. You know, that's quite a bit of cars coming through and generating through. As far as the tag and hold on these cars, where would we put them? It's definitely going to be a constraint there. From the public, we estimate buying from an individual or buying from somebody just off the street, we're estimating probably close to 40,000 cars a year going into a scrap facility or a salvage yard. That number could be higher. These are just rough estimates. We also report all our cars. We're required by law right now, a federal law, to report them to NMVDIS, which is the federal database where you report the VIN numbers and the person's information as far as driver's license, whatnot, any characteristics, so that the police investigations can go further through. You know, we understand where Mr. Choi is going with his bill, and we understand some loopholes. We're willing to work with him. We made the attempt last year, and we were on a good pace, and we felt like we were getting somewhere. You know, and I think that talk can continue to see if we can come to some sort of solution. But as of right now, with the way the bill sits, it is definitely not a bill that's going to work for the scrap industry.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there, are there any other question, sir? Mr. K, what do you want to ask?
Mr. Kelly. Knight, is it? White.
It's Mr. White, yes.
Mr. Chair. And Mr. White, I guess in your business, it's a commodities business, right? Your metals and trading metals. If you are now forced to hold my vehicle, if I come in and want to sell that to you, I just your opinion, what's going to be the value of my vehicle now if you can't automatically know what the price of that commodity is the next day? Am I going to have a higher price for my vehicle, or am I going to have a lower price for my vehicle?
Mr. White.
Chair and committee, definitely lower. You know, it's a market-based commodity that could change minute, could be changed hour, could be changed daily or monthly. It has a fluctuation that is huge. Granted, some months or some days or whatnot aren't as huge as the others, but back when the stock market was so volatile back in 2007, 2008, so was the scrap industry, where a value of a car may have been $300, $400, then the next day or next week it's worth $100. There is volatility there.
Mr. Chair. Then in your opinion, Mr. White, if we put on this legislation, since we're talking about it statewide again, you have any idea what the impact of that could be to all consumers in the state?
Mr. White.
Chair and committee, it'd be outstanding. The aspect of holding a car and not being able to market or process it, the fact of leaving it on a property that in the metro alone, my company alone, we don't have the square footage to hold cars. With the statute that's being proposed, the 5-day hold on the cars with titles, you know, if it comes with a title, it should be good to go. Why should you hold that car? The cars without titles, if you have proof of ownership or if you have documentation, if they're coming in with the car, you know, they're taking the burden. If it's signing an affidavit, we've given options as far as different ways we can go about this. But they're committing the felon or the small cases that a person's bringing these cars in and committing that felony of grand theft auto or property theft. You know, they're the ones responsible. The data is being collected. The information is there. Could the reporting time to the database that we already report to, which is NMBTAS, the federal, and the DPS system that we already report to in the state of Minnesota, could we work with reporting times faster? Sure. I believe there is some compromise there, especially on the cars that the title is not relevant. You talk about in the outstate non-metro area, you're talking about cars that are at farmers' communities or farms' lands that are, you know, Grove cars. You know, those cars come in all the time. We do cleanups all the time. Another representative with me, that's primarily all his cars that he gets, is these cars that have been abandoned out in farm fields that have been collected throughout the years. You're never going to find a title for it. DPS has admitted that a lot of those cars that haven't been registered as far as new tabs, they consider as being scrapped, and then the old ones sitting in the field. Now you're talking about having to hold those cars as well.
Mr. Chair. Just one follow-up then. Mr. White, if you are looking at having to expand your business and to house all these vehicles, are these restrictions or just across the state line here in Wisconsin, for instance?
Mr. White?
Mr. Chair and Committee, there is no such restrictions in Wisconsin at this time. I could see a lot of property, a lot of individuals, not labeling them as thieves, but individuals that want their money right away, want to recycle the car in an appropriate manner and get paid right away. I could see them going out of state, and it could happen.
And Mr. Chair, final question then. Thank you, Mr. White. Then, as a business person, then if you're thinking about this possible legislation and it gets passed, would you have to think about that as a possibility of moving your business and doing business and taking jobs out of this state to do something where it's more business friendly for you?
Mr. White.
Mr. Chair and committee, yes, it would definitely be a consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, are there any other opponents to the, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Neil Bice. I own and operate a scrapyard in northern Minnesota. I spoke with Mr. Rukavina this morning. He sends his best, the commie from up north, Tommy the commie, has said to say hi. Anyways, just in an overview of this legislation.
Nothing like Tommy.
Yeah. Says it like it is. Anyhow, this legislation as it sits, you know, it's going to have an adverse effect on our business. And I know you've been bombed already with a bunch of numbers already this morning, and I've stuck another piece of paper in front of you to kind of explain how it affects us. In 2012, we approximately did about 4,000 automobiles. And we're a rural company. We're not in the Twin Cities. We're not susceptible to all these schemes where people are grabbing tow trucks and pulling cars out of people's driveways. Maybe we're not that creative. Maybe we're more simple. I'm not sure. Anyways, getting to my point, when you look at that sheet of paper, these are the costs that I've identified. If 2012, Mr. Choi's legislation would pass, this is what it would have cost my business. We're about a $7 million business a year. We employ 25 full-time people. We have 4 full-time supervisors. Average wage is about $40,000 a year for our people. This would cost us a lot of money, $250,000 in excess of that per year. And this is just the first year cost. And if that continued, you know, every year per year, that gets pretty expensive. But I wanted to talk about a few other things here while I'm here and have the minute to do so. The 2007 legislation, if you're all familiar with it, exists. Currently in its form today, it works. The problem that we have is my competitors. I hold myself accountable. I hold my health, my company to a higher esteem. But I don't know that my competitors all do. Not everybody's a member of ISRI. Not everybody cares. That's the reality in anybody's business. Some people do it better than others. We all know that. The problem I think that exists here is that we are not enforcing the 2007 legislation that was put in place by this body of government. Anyhow, if we were to somehow be able to police our industry better and hold our competitors accountable, I think that the law works. It's just that the folks aren't following it. You know, Metro Metals, prime example. What was the result of that situation? Well, we caught 26 bad guys, but what happened to Metro Metals? I bet you they're still in business today. You know, they need to be held accountable. That's for sure. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any other opponents that would like to make a comment? Very good. Representative Mahoney, do you have any closing comments, or are there any questions of the author of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will make some closing comments. This may not be a problem in your area today, but it's a problem coming to your area tomorrow or the next day or next week. We have hundreds of people that depend on their vehicle to get to work, to get the medical appointments, or just for day-to-day issues. And to come out and to find your car missing, it is, you know, I could use any number of superlatives, but I'll just leave it at that. We need to do something, and we need to take care of the bad actors. I could say many, many more things about this. This is the pawn shop said the same things that the scrap metal dealers are saying today, 10 or 15 years ago. We can't do this. We'll go out of business. We'll move to another state. It'll just cost jobs. You know, there's more pawn shops today than there ever was. And there will be more pawn shops, and there will be more scrap dealers at some point. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is the first stop on this bill. It's got at least 2 more and maybe 3 more stops before it gets there. I'm sure, and I have talked to both sides of the issue, saying that there needs to be some common ground that they can come to. And you have my assurance that if I have to be my sweet and charming self, as I always am, I will step in and try to figure out a way that we can find some things that work and stop this particular issue from coming back to the legislature.
Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, overall I like the concept of this car. I've worked a number of auto theft cases. In fact, in my 27 years, I only have one vehicle that was never recovered. And I don't know how many hundreds of stolen vehicles I worked. Like I said, overall, the concept of this bill is good, but there's problems on both sides.
This bill, I think, is a little over-burdensome for the businesses, but the businesses also need to do some things. One of the issues that they put out on their paperwork that they gave us was required law enforcement to report the thefts to these scrap metals. We actually did in Isani County. I don't know if some of you remember earlier last spring, our cemeteries were vandalized and all the military flag holders, brass flag holders, were stolen. We found out where they were, at a scrap dealer. We advised them that they were stolen and that we would be there the next day to pick them up. That scrap dealer got rid of them, took the cash and ran. Because of the way the laws are set up now, we couldn't do anything to him. We could not prosecute him. And he was not real cooperative in law enforcement to providing information on who the person was that brought him in. Both sides need to work together to get this done, or the scrap dealers and their association is going to get hard with some of this stuff. But right now, this bill is a little bit too overreaching. But I think both sides need to get together and start over and on a new bill and get things worked out.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, my other chair. You know, as a former mayor, this is a problem, and this is a big problem. And in the city of Champlin, where I was mayor, we had numerous instances of this. And I have to echo what Representative Johnson says. We need to address this. The business community, in this particular aspect, the scrap metal community, you know, needs to be a good partner with law enforcement. And I think many of them are, but some of them aren't. And that's the problem. This bill is not ready for prime time yet, in my opinion. I think it is erroneous on some of the burdens that it places on business, you know, posting a bond, the idea of certified mail return receipt. I can understand from a business standpoint how difficult that would be, particularly in some of the volume that you do. But the APS system has been proven to work very, very well with pawn shops. I know that our cops in the city of Champlin really feel that that is a good system and really eradicates a lot of problems with pawn shops. So I would urge that County Attorney Choi and everybody work together. That's the way we got to get things done here. But there is a problem, and I can tell you that if the right bill comes along, I'll vote for it, because we need to correct this. We need to correct this, but it has to be done in a partnership manner. Thank you.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, I appreciate your last comments that you're willing to review and look at this bill. But I think there's just one point that we're missing here, and it's all about personal responsibility. I actually had my car stolen 7 years ago. Teenagers joyriding actually drove it up to northern Minnesota, blazing through the logging trails, and ended up pushing it off a cliff. That's where they retrieved the car. They found the car. But the issue is it was insured. And I understand that we all have choices when it gets down to, do I have full insurance or do I have only liability insurance? But the bottom line is that you do have an avenue to protect yourself. And I'm afraid that we're looking at a situation where, because we make certain choices and are pushing off our risk, we're actually pushing off a liability onto the rest of Minnesotans in the avenue of reduced pricing, for example, when we go into the scrap metal places for our vehicles. So I appreciate the fact that you will be reviewing this, and I hope we get together. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And County Attorney Choi, I want to...
hope we get together. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And County Attorney Choi, I want to echo my colleagues on both sides of the issue here and say that I seriously hope that you can answer some of the questions and work out a compromise as this bill goes forward.
Mr. Chair, I intend to bring forward to the House floor a bill that will pass with almost unanimous.
Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 1214 be passed and referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in favor, if there's any further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? That motion prevails.
Nope. Mr. Chair, thank you, Committee.
I'm sorry. All those opposed? Oh. That motion prevails. Thank you, members.